WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Welcome to WrestleSpective Radio at FairToFlare.com. My name is Jason Mann, and today my very special guest, he is the co-host of the Old School Wrestling Podcast, which you can find at FlareChop.com. He is the exciting Dre. Dre, how you doing?
Hey, pretty good, Jason. Good to talk to you tonight.
Yeah. I'm very excited to have you on the show. Today we are talking about SummerSlam 2005, very famous match between two icons of professional wrestling, Hulk Hogan and Shawn Michaels.
That's right, brother.
Yeah. Kind of the build-up to this match is really interesting. Shawn Michaels, out of nowhere, he and Hogan are involved in a tag match against Kurt Angle and Carlito. It was actually July 4th, 2005. And then out of nowhere at the end of the match, after Hogan and Michaels win, Shawn Michaels turns and superkicks Hogan. And that kind of leads to a really memorable a few weeks later where Shawn Michaels has this vignette where he's impersonating Hulk Hogan on Larry King Live and just really runs him down and kind of brings up some of the real life stuff with Hogan, you know, having an ego and not wanting to lay down and that kind of thing. What do you remember about that period?
Well, yeah, you know what, I was reminded mostly from the lead-in video that they did on the SummerSlam pay-per-view, because, again, you know, and this is going back to 2005, so it's been a long time since I've watched this or reviewed it, so
sure.
I kind of dusted some cobwebs out of my brain. But yeah, I think it all started kind of when Hogan got introduced into the Hall of Fame earlier that year, and there was this big, huge chant from the crowd, "One more match, one more match," and Shawn Michaels kind of at that point heard the fans, and he kind of picked up that chant and started being the voice of the fans, and was begging Hogan to come back for one more match, and that's kind of what set up that tag team match with Hogan and Michaels against, was it Carlito and Angle?
Yeah, that was the July 4th one. They had a tag match earlier in Backlash in May of 05, May 1st of 05, that they beat Muhammad Hassan and Daivari.
Okay.
So that, yeah, Hogan was kind of involved in a thing. I think that WrestleMania he did a run in and he punched out Muhammad Hassan and Daivari, you know, when they were doing some sort of when they were beating somebody up, and then sort of Michaels it took his stead at that point. And then and then Hogan kind of disappeared after that, and then sort of just suddenly showed up I think the previous week on Raw and then you know came back for the July 4th show. And it's interesting because the July 4th show is usually like the nothing show, where they don't, you know, do too much because it's a holiday and it's a smaller audience. So them, for them to start it at that point was really interesting. One thing that I thought was interesting is because the first promo that Michaels did, I remember, was a couple weeks afterward, and he very much like kind of hedges his bet as far as sort of like explaining like why he did it, and he's sort of trying to like sort of still kind of remain neutral, like sort of be the bad guy, but not like alienate the fans.
Or at least that's what it seemed like. I agree. It almost felt like, Shawn was kind of put in this position where, hey, you know, here's a big marquee matchup for SummerSlam. We're going to bring Hogan back, and we want you to be the guy that goes against him. And Shawn was probably sitting in the office thinking, I'm just putting myself in somebody's boots who would be going through this. I'm thinking, Shawn's thinking, you know what, hey, I'm like a super popular baby face, you know, I'm one of the top baby faces in this company, and I know that Hogan's not going to be the heel, so I'm going to be forced to be the heel. But as soon as Hogan's gone after this pay-per-view, I got to go back and do the same character I used to be. So I got to try to do something to save my face here.
Yeah. But it seemed like after that first promo that was kind of weak, like once he did Larry King thing, and then the next week where he was, they were in Montreal, and then he was, you know, cut running down Hulk, and I think they even like teased like Brett would show up and all that, and he like dared him to come down, and then Brett's theme music came on, but nobody came down. Like he was really like playing it up, like he was really embracing the villain role, and I just thought he was so awesome when he did that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Sean's, you know, such a talented guy. He can go both ways.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just so it's interesting that after his comeback in 2002, I mean, he really, that was the only time he was ever able to play that villain role, even though he was so fantastic at it for a long time. I really preferred him a lot much more as a villain than as a good guy. I never really connected with him as a good guy.
Yeah, you know, but there's some guys out there that just have such a connection with the fans that no matter what they do, it's almost impossible for them to be heels. I'd put Shawn Michaels in that category. I'd put Ric Flair in that category. You know, I mean, they could come and spit on your mother and you'd still cheer for them.
Yeah, I guess you once you reach a certain point and just have that crowd in the palm of your hand, it really is hard to play that role. But I think he did it okay here. I mean, this crowd is like unbelievably into Hogan at SummerSlam and stuff. Like I just that pop that he gets when his music comes out and he's coming out is just like. Giant, yeah. You know?
Yeah, it's cool. It's you know, Hogan had that whole, like, nostalgia run from, like, I don't know, what was it, like, 2002 or something like that to 2005, yeah. Where he first came back and did the match with Rock in the WrestleMania match, mm-hmm. where he went on, like, a whole year tour where he would walk into the ring and people would you know, chant Hulk, Hulk, Hulk for, like, 15 minutes straight, and they would just milk the crowd each time. It was a pretty cool thing to see.
Yeah, and you know, I've like I said, I the vague memories or the you know somewhat good memories of that, but just the when I just heard it through my headphones as I was listening to it, I was just like, wow, like you don't hear pops like that too often, and it was really, and I love like he's walking out and then there's like this suddenly this giant American flag behind him, and he gives it like the big salute, and that's pretty hilarious. So. Yeah.
You know, here's the unfortunate part. The fans, all they wanted, they kept chanting, one more match. But unfortunately, I don't know what part of one Hogan didn't understand. He said, you know what, fans, I'm sorry, I can't give you one more match. I got to give you like 15
matches. Right. Yeah. Well, he's probably had maybe 10 after this point. I mean, so he isn't exactly, you know, I mean, he's maybe overstayed his welcome in one sense, but as far as getting back into the ring, well, I mean, he can barely even walk at this point, but probably hasn't overdone it, but you're right. I mean, if this had been his last match, that would have been a pretty good way to go out.
Yeah. I would probably say that everything from this point is pretty much downhill for Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, I would agree. It pretty much in both in wrestling and in personal life.
Yeah, you know, that's a real like touchy subject too, because I mean, you talk about this match with Shawn Michaels. This is before the TNA comeback. This is before the divorce and all the depression that he went through.
Yeah.
It's before his son was in the car accident. It's before he was even on that reality show. I mean, Hogan's life like fell apart after this match with Shawn.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they really. Yeah, you know, I was sort of laughing about that, but you're right. Yeah, that really is kind of just a weird.
Just a downturn. Weird
point. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, he's got a lot of enemies out there that say a lot of bad stuff about him. You know how selfish he is and stuff like that. But, you know, I mean, you can't fault a guy for making a good financial deal for himself. You know, I mean, that during those WCW years, he was making a ridiculous amount of money and like way more than anybody else who was either close to like number two on the card. So, you know, you can't fault a guy. I mean, that's like you and me. Let's say we go to work every day and our boss offers us like 10 times the next guy's salary. Is it really our fault that if we say yes?
No, absolutely not. You know, and you can question maybe individual decisions Hogan made, kind of exercising his power and, you know, and sort of not being willing to necessarily work with guys. But, you know, if you're not in that position, it's hard to it's hard to really judge, especially when Hogan, he was a target of a lot of guys. I mean, wrestling's a tough business. There's a lot of, weird things that happen backstage. I mean, even, Hogan was even, involved in Vince Russo trying to embarrass him and, things like that. And even, this feud, there was kind of some backstage stuff going on, where, Michaels, from what I've reports that I've read, Michaels wasn't really happy about having to lose this match. There was talk of doing a rematch the next show, and Hogan wasn't interested. And Michaels even does a big promo the day afterward, basically, chastising Hogan for taking his ball and going home. It almost.
No, I definitely remember that. I mean, that's one of the things that when you contacted me about doing a SummerSlam show, I wanted to do this match because, man, I remember that next day promo like it was yesterday. Sean says, all this. Basically he doesn't even want to touch like the whole base on Hulk Hogan, but he says on the next day, he says, Hulk Hogan, it was a pleasure working with you. And then he does like this pantomime of like Pinocchio's nose growing, and he did it like live on TV, and it's like, wow, that must have been a bad situation backstage.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you think about this almost like in the terms of like this being like the 1996 Shawn Michaels and the 1996 Hulk Hogan. Really the Michaels, because he's really kind of playing up sort of his bad boy tendencies, which he, obviously when he came back, he'd always sort of downplayed from 2002 on. So he's kind of bringing that back a little bit in his character. It just kind of fascinating to think about. I mean, these two guys were in 96, these were the two top guys who were battling each other in those Raw and Nitro days. And that, surprised some bad blood from that.
Yeah. And back on Hulk Hogan's point again, when we go through this match, I am going to rip Hogan apart, but I just want to do my one bit of defense for Hogan. He's from the old school where it wasn't about, they weren't in the wrestling business. They were in the Hulk Hogan business. Mm-hmm. His whole deal is he was taught that you watch out for yourself and you do whatever you can to make yourself as marketable and as profitable as possible. And that was a different time where today, the wrestlers are, they want to work with each other to make the product better. And that's just like a whole new philosophy that wasn't around when Hogan got started in the business.
Yeah. That's an interesting point. Yeah, definitely. Honestly, I kind of think that Hogan, clearly Michaels is doing an inordinate amount of the work here and makes this match into, how great it is. But I did like some of Hogan's work here. I mean, I thought his selling from Michaels was actually pretty strong. He can't do the bumping, but as far as selling, Michaels' chops and blows with pain and kind of, making the smaller guy's offense look believable, I thought Hogan actually did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Yeah. Kind of getting started into the actual match, they do sort of the lockup, and Hogan sort of shoves him back to a huge reaction, pushing him down twice, and Michaels does the whole I'm frustrated, I'm going to go out of the ring thing, sort of works the there's some you screwed Brett chants at him kind of after that angle we talked about before. So at least they were a little bit warranted as opposed to just them being random with them never mentioning Brett during that time. But so, we then eventually he's able to sort of get a little bit of control on the headlock until getting knocked out of the ring with a big shoulder block, and then more of Michael's frustration installing here. And I thought just his work on that was just pretty incredible.
Yeah. I mean, he really kind of took the heel position in this match where, the old school kind of, heel, I'm frustrated, I'm going to walk out of this match. I don't need this. I'm better than this. He kind of played up that whole character. But, you know what I kind of noticed as I was watching this match right here at the beginning, like you said, it started up with a tie up. Hogan overpowered him, came back to a headlock, and Hogan overpowered him again. Both times, and even the third time when Hogan outpowered him, Shawn Michaels really just kind of oversold the push off. And I was thinking the whole time that this is kind of like a little wink wink to all of his fans that Shawn Michaels is not happy about what he's doing in the ring tonight. He's not happy that things are that's just kind of the impression I got. I mean, he was just overselling the pushback, and there was a point where Shawn Michaels gets tossed up on the corner of the top turnbuckle, and Hogan comes over to kick his belly, and he flies up in the air 7 feet from a basic Hogan kick. And it's just such an oversell that it's is Shawn Michaels on the up and up here, or what's going on?
Yeah, Now, I didn't think of that as much during the body of the match, but during the finish, I definitely, and I think a lot of people have pointed that out in the past, where, like, his selling of the final, you know, boots, instead of just, like, falling down with the boot, he, like, falls down, and he gets back up, and he, like, spins around, and just, like, dramatically, like,
yeah,
goes crazy, and then, like, Hogan even, like, at that point, you know, Hogan, like, stalls, and he, like, he cups the ear a bunch of times, and he takes, like, a really long time before he drops the leg and hits the finish. Almost, like, where you notice it's, like, really weird. I think even Ross says something like, oh, you know, Hogan better hurry up here, or whatever. But
if you watch the video pretty closely, I know we're kind of skipping ahead here, but right as Shawn Michaels is laying down waiting for Hogan to drop the big leg drop for the finisher, Michaels is sitting there with his eyes open, screaming something at the top of his lungs in like a classic like temper tantrum Shawn Michaels style. I mean, I can't read his lips, but you know that he's saying something that's. You know, that's on his mind and he needs to say it. You remember, you ever heard the story about like when Shawn first won the title from Bret Hart at that WrestleMania Iron Man match?
Yes.
After Shawn Michaels got the title in his hand, it's like a classic shot where he's down on his knees and he's looking at the belt, and Bret Hart is kind of waiting at the inside in the corner, and he's kind of waiting for a respectful handshake. And the story goes that, and Shawn Michaels attests to this, he turns to the referee and he says, "Get that motherfucker the fuck out of my ring right now."
Yeah.
Like, and so, I mean, that's just like the selfishness of Shawn Michaels back then. But, you know, he's a guy who knows he's putting over somebody that he's not happy about putting over somebody. And he's just like having a little temper tantrum there in the ring.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'd never noticed. That's a really good observation. And it makes sense. I mean, Michaels has, a history in his, you know, from like 92 through 98 of a lot of instances like that, of whether it's, you know, in the ring or backstage, of, you know, unprofessional conduct, all of which he's owned up to. So it's just weird to see that same Shawn Michaels crop up here when you didn't really see that post 2002. Maybe a couple, you know, maybe he would get angry in the ring once in a while at things, but for the most part, you know, you saw the good Shawn Michaels.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, there's definitely a number of instances where he just bumps like crazy on, things like, just getting tossed in the corner, kicked repeatedly in the air, and then crotched on the ropes, you know, and pinballing off the turnbuckle, you know, I noticed at a certain point that this match is totally a Hogan style Saturday Night's Main Event style formula match.
Oh, absolutely. Hogan called this whole thing. I mean, you can watch it. You can pretty much replace Shawn Michaels out with anybody else, and it would have been the same match. Hogan was calling it. Hogan made the decision of what we're going to do. Because, you know, I mean, if you ever heard Hogan talk, man, he's or heard anybody talk about working with Hogan, you know, Hulk's in charge. You know, he's the guy who made all the money all these years, and he knows what he's doing. So, you know, you either listen to the Hulk or you don't get paid that much.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you know, right. I mean, I think the thing that distinguishes it obviously is just the dramatic selling that Michaels, you know, employs, and frankly, you know, later in the match, the blood, I mean, that's obviously a much, that didn't happen too much in Saturday's main event in that era. But, eventually after, you know, a lot of the bumping, Michaels sort of gets a thumb to the eye to kind of take some control. And then, although he does get, clotheslined over the top rope, dramatically flips around and rolls around in the back, and then Hogan sort of pulls him in using the ropes and fouls with a big clothesline, but he's able to kick Hogan on a backdrop attempt. Then we kind of get them outside again, and Shawn tries to ram Hogan's head into the corner, and eventually, like, he spends like a whole lot of time trying to trying to get that blood going, you know, going after that head, like really, really aggressively. And like, even like Hogan sort of like staggers around, for a while. And you can tell he's like, you know, touching his head. You don't really see the blade. At least I didn't notice the blade, but I mean, you know, we don't know for wrestling to know what he's doing. But it took forever for him to bleed. But once he bleeds, man, he really does.
Yeah. You know, that's one of the notes I took here too, is, Yeah, I mean, I believe what they were trying to go for was that Shawn Michaels was going to get Hogan busted open by bashing his head against the post on the outside.
Right.
He did do that. They got back in the ring, and it doesn't seem like the blood was flowing all that good. So yeah, like you said, Shawn is just, like, unwailing, like, some stiff shots. Like, you know the kind of shots you see in wrestling where you see a guy stick the knuckle out just to kind of dig as he's scraping by the guy's forehead, mm-hmm. just to kind of open up that little wound? That's kind of what Shawn was doing, but he was still having no luck. And if you, again, if you watch the tape, you don't pay attention to the fists. You pay attention to Hogan. He is trying to unravel his wrist tape to reach for the blade, and it's taking him forever. And he's just really awkward trying to get it out.
Mm-hmm.
And it really seems about this time. I don't know if – I know that, you know, Hogan's gotten blood before in the past, but it really seemed like right about this time Hogan started using the blade job as a crutch in all of his matches. I mean, you've seen, like, Hogan in the last 15 matches he's had over the last couple of years. He's just, like, bleeding like a stuck pig in every single one of them.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And that's an old guy trick. I mean, that's, mm-hmm. You know, it seems like a lot of the old wrestlers, you know, when they're winding down, that's kind of one of the things that they feel like they have to do.
Yeah, you know, hey, it hurts real bad if I fall on my back, but it doesn't hurt so much if I slice my forehead with a razor blade.
Right. I did think they covered it nice in the sense that, like, Michaels keeps, like Hogan's sitting in the corner or standing in the corner, and Michaels keeps going up. And then, you know, punching him a few times, and then kind of Hogan shoves him off, and then Michaels is, like, really intense at, like, going after it. Like, mm-hmm. at least it made it so it seemed a little bit less awkward once he was doing that. So
yeah, I think Shawn did a great job of trying to cover it up.
Yeah,
Hogan was very awkward, but Shawn, you know, saw that he was having trouble and really kind of did him a favor of trying to cover it up.
Yeah, exactly. So after that, after Hogan's finally bleeding, and once he bleeds really, really yeah. badly, then Michaels gets a sleeper, and you can see Hogan's blood, like, dripping onto Michaels' arm, which really,
oh, it's
really
nasty.
Gross.
Yeah. It's nasty. Like, he's got that arm underneath Hogan's chin, and the blood is just, like, pooling up in, like, the crevice of his elbow.
Yeah, definitely.
It's nasty.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's gross, no question. And he's able to get a backdrop suplex to get out of the sleeper. It's a pretty decently long sleeper. But Michaels gets the flying forearm and kips up, which mostly gets booed, although there are a handful of cheers. But this is definitely at least an 80% Hogan crowd, if not more.
Agreed.
And he goes up to the top and then misses the elbow. And then Hulk does his first Hulk up points, and then he hits the punches, sends him into the rope. But then Michaels hits a really cool flying forearm out of nowhere. But then the ref ends up getting knocked out.
The referee did not get pregnant in this match. I swear he did not.
Exactly. I hope not. Anyway, there was enough bodily fluids around. You never know. But
he got pregnant from Hogan's old blood.
Yeah, yeah. That's not a good way. No. You know, we do know that Hogan, you know, the power of Hulkamania is strong, but hopefully it's not that strong. So at that point, Michaels kips up again, and he's got the most wonderful cocky smile on his face, the greatest, like, heel look that he has. And then he teases going for an elbow, but then he decides to do the sharpshooter instead, which they kind of mm-hmm. do the dramatic pull toward the rope, which I didn't think quite worked. I don't know. I've seen that sequence. I guess part of it is that Michaels can't really get down too far on Hogan, because obviously Hogan is not too flexible when he's, you know.
You know what I noticed at this point, especially during the sharpshooter, because Hogan's in such, like, an awkward position, you know, him bent backwards on the mat. Man, like, you know, Hogan's body, as he aged, he got, like, this real weird shaped, like, chest where his belly and his chest were like a barrel. Like, there wasn't much muscle tone, but, like, his ribs must have gotten gigantic over the years.
That's true. That's interesting.
And you know, his legs aren't, like, as big as his chest should be. You know, it's just, like, a weird, like, kind of old man style. You know, he kind of looks like the guy from the American Choppers TV show.
Oh, okay, yeah.
The dad, he's just like this big barrel-chested weird dude with a leather weightlifting belt on.
Yes, exactly. eventually, Hogan's able to get out of the first sharpshooter, and then Michaels tries another one, but Hogan kicks Michaels into the ref, and we have another ref bump. So Hogan pulls himself up. He's limping. He drags himself to Michaels, who hits him with a really good low blow. I think he definitely didn't pull that one too much. Then Michaels grabs a chair and he smacks him in the head really hard after a dramatic tease. He didn't really pull that one either. So, and then after that, Michaels hits the elbow. He teases the super kick. He sort of motions to the ref tries to revive the ref a little bit, and then he's able to hit it, but then Hogan does the biggest power kick out. I mean, I guess I've seen that before, but it was just a power kick out to the point of absurdity. He hulks up, and then, as we talked about, Sean really does the oversell the big boot to the point of ridiculous absurdity. And then,
well, I mean, you think about it. The dude just overdramatically kicked out of two of your finishers.
Yeah.
The flying elbow drop followed by sweet chin music.
Yeah.
I mean, what a slap in the face, really.
Right, right. Yeah, that's an absolutely good point. So, and then, you know, we described the finish before. And yeah, that was just pretty. I honestly think. Normally, I would think stuff like that would be annoying, like the kind of the showing each other up and the kind of the showing that pro wrestling is fake kind of stuff. But this match, I think it completely works. I think it's completely awesome. It makes it better, more dramatic, more fun, more exciting. Like, this is a paradise for me, honestly. The whole thing. Yeah. I really liked it.
Yeah. I remember when the show I watched it live. I was buying very few pay-per-views in 2005, and this was one that I bought just because of the main event. I mean, I just figured, you know what? Shawn Michaels does not have bad matches against anybody. I want to see what he does with Hulk Hogan, who does not have good matches with anybody. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to see what Shawn would come up with. And when the show was over, I mean, I just remember sitting on my couch thinking, man, Shawn Michaels kind of made a fool out of Hulk Hogan tonight. Because, I mean, you know, I knew going in that, you know, Hogan wasn't going to do a job for Shawn Michaels. He's Hulk Hogan. What is Shawn going to do? What's in his bag of tricks? And I just had this weird feeling in my stomach as soon as the show was over. Like, man, Shawn kind of was showing him up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, there's a good case they were kind of showing each other up a little bit. But I certainly agree that Michaels, he proved a lot of things, both good and bad, in this match, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did a nice little, handshake spot afterward of Michaels, you know, kind of shoving Hogan, offering his hand, and then saying, "I needed to know, and I found out," which actually harkens back to the SummerSlam 2004 finish, which, is Orton and Benoit, and then after Benoit loses, he comes back and he shakes his hand and says, you know, like, or he sort of says, be a man, and then he finally shakes his hand. So I kind of liked the, I kind of liked that there. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
I always appreciate the handshake at the end.
Yeah, the handshake is good. You know.
You know why? Because gentlemen shake hands.
Exactly. Yeah. So. Yeah, I'm not sure it was appropriate given the level of hate here, but it was kind of neat. You know,
it was probably scripted from the beginning, so they had to go through the motions.
Well, yeah, they definitely did. So yeah, I don't know. This is just a, you know, for both of us who, you know, obviously were big fans during the Monday Night Wars, it's just it's almost the best thing that WWE ever pulled out of the WWE versus WCW stuff. Like, anything they did that kind of played off of those emotions, this would either be the top or near the top of my list.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people complain about the way that the WWF handled the whole invasion angle, and obviously they botched it. There's no debating that. But you know, if you were 10 years later to put together like a good compilation tape of, you know, matches like this, matches with Hulk Hogan and The Rock, you know, there's a couple of them out there that, you know, didn't happen right away. Some of the Goldberg stuff in the WWF, you know, they didn't really happen right away, but over the 5 years afterwards, if you kind of combine them into one, like maybe 3-hour tape, you could have some, you know, some pretty good WCW versus WWF stuff on there.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you're just taking the best stuff and sort of divorcing it from context,
then good point. Yeah, that's
even, even during the invasion stuff, I mean, there were a couple things that were really good out of that. It was just the rest of the awfulness that ruined it. But yeah, that's a good point. I think you could really. I wonder, obviously, they just put out the WCW Nitro DVD. I wonder if there would be any kind of, you know, any kind of interest in a, you know, WCW versus WWE type, you know, tape, that kind of what we're describing. I think you could probably market something like that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they, I guess they, it started with, I guess the first one they really did was the Monday Night War DVD. And, you know, they probably thought, okay, we have all this WCW footage. Let's put this tape together and be done with it. But, you know, it sold so many copies that, you know, then they came out with, like, the Best of the Starcades. And then they came out with, like, the Rise and Fall of WCW. And, you know, if the market's there, they'll keep doing it.
Yeah, yeah. And I obviously love that stuff. That's my favorite era of wrestling. Yeah, and WCW is my, you know, WWE, they're both my favorite promotions, you know, just of that era and stuff. So it's good times.
Yeah, yeah, agreed.
So why don't you tell everybody about the Old School Wrestling Podcast?
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I me and my partner, the Black Cat, Juke Williams, we host the Old School Wrestling Podcast, and it's basically a podcast where we both watch either a full, like, pay-per-view, or even sometimes we do a shorter, like, mini-cast where we just look at one match. And basically what we do is we just review it. We talk about, like, what kind of thoughts were going through our heads at the time that this match was going on, and, like, you know, what our impression of it is now as adults watching it. And, you know, what we try to do is we really try to keep it light and funny and you know, just talk about the positive things about wrestling that we enjoyed growing up and just kind of, you know, hopefully remind you that, you know, there was a time when you liked watching professional wrestling. So, yeah, you can find it by typing in Flair Chop to anywhere. You type it in Google, you type it in iTunes, the word Flair Chop, you'll find our Old School Wrestling Podcast.
Yeah, definitely. Everyone, check it out. It is one of my favorite podcasts about wrestling there on the internet. We sort of cover some of the same terrain, but I've with Black Cat, I've sort of indulged in a completely real, you know, Monday night podcast war between the two of us. but yeah, it's I've had him on the show too, so I'm glad I was able to get you on the show, and definitely worth checking out. And everyone, we're of course in the midst of a series of SummerSlam main events, and tomorrow we will have John Cena and Edge at SummerSlam 2006. So keep checking us out. WrestleSpective.com and FairToFlare.com are the places to go. And Dre, thanks a lot for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. And I appreciate, you know, all the plugs you give us on Twitter, too. It's really cool. You know, the internet wrestling community can be kind of mean to each other, and I really appreciate how cool you've been to us.
Hey, no problem. And we appreciate the same. And thanks, everyone, for listening. And we'll be back again soon.
Let's be honest. Most wrestling websites suck. BS rumors, schoolyard gossip, plagiarism. It's no wonder why no one believes anything they read on the internet. Well, if you can't get something done right, you might as well do it yourself. Presenting the Fair to Flair Quarterly from the writers of FairToFlare.com and over a dozen other wrestling websites. We're not copy and pasting what we read in some newsletter. This is 100% original content from the best wrestling bloggers on the internet. In-depth analysis of the art of pro wrestling, debate, artwork, and humor. The Fair to Flair Quarterly will raise the bar of what wrestling journalism can and should be. Professionally edited and produced, and every contributor will be paid for their work. Order your copy of the Fair to Flair Quarterly today at FairToFlare.com. The better wrestling media has arrived.